Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to this incredibly special episode where we take a deep dive into the state of Nagorno-Karabakh or Artsakh. For today's conversation, I was joined by Ms. Anush Ghavalyan. Ms. Ghavalyan has served as the former advisor to the President of the National Assembly of the Republic of Artsakh. She currently works as a political analyst living in Artsakh, and I was lucky enough to speak with her at length about the state of her country and the effects of the recent conflict. I was rather surprised to learn that Artsakh is governed as though it were a de facto state. It was also the first time that I heard of a legal loophole that Azerbaijan has used to deny Artsakh the right to secede or the right to self-determination post the collapse of the Soviet Union. We discussed the horrors of the conflict on ground, the plight of internally displaced peoples, and the massive rebuilding effort that lies ahead for the government of Artsakh. Among other things, we also talk about the role of the international community in the Nagorno-Karabakh question, and why the citizens of Artsakh currently have a very favourable view of Russia. During our call, the connection dropped a fair few times, and Ms. Ghavalyan kept apologising about the poor internet connection, which was a result of the multiple bombings that services in Artsakh have faced. This is just a small indication of the sheer extent of the losses experienced within the region. As always, please do tell your friends and family about the show, and don't forget to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to us. Here's my conversation with Ms. Ghavalyan on the story behind Nagorno-Karabakh. Hello and welcome to this episode of Matterfile, where I have the pleasure of being joined by Ms. Anush Ghavalyan. Thank you so much and welcome to the show, ma'am.
Thank you so much.
I want to start with the history of Artsakh. As I understand it, forever, so for millennia now, Artsakh has been occupied by people of Armenian descent. When did Artsakh become territory of Azerbaijan and why was it placed under the national rule of Azerbaijan?
So the conflict is dating back to the 20th century. It's a century-old conflict. Back to the collapse of the Russian Empire in 1918, when the Russian Empire collapsed, three nation states appeared on the in the region: Armenia, Azerbaijan, and Georgia. So during this period of time, Azerbaijan proclaimed its independence, and also it presented territorial claims to its neighbor Armenia over Nagorno-Karabakh or Nakhichevan and other regions. Artsakh, during this period of time, it was a part of the Russian Empire, but when the Russian Empire collapsed, it became just a sovereign territory, and it didn't belong to Azerbaijan. It was mostly populated by Armenians, and Armenians here had a kind of autonomy, and Nagorno-Karabakh has been never part of Azerbaijan during that time and also in the future. So when Azerbaijan proclaimed its independence and created a statehood in 1918 and 1920, it presented territorial claims and over Nagorno-Karabakh, over Artsakh, and even when we observe the documents of that time, we see that even the League of Nations that was dealing with these issues in the 90s, It declined Azerbaijan's appeal to League of Nations, its membership, because it has it had no clear boundaries, and also for its territorial disputes with neighbor countries. So when we also observe the documents and take into consideration the documents presenting those time, we see that Artsakh, the population of Artsakh, never accepted the authority of Azerbaijani Republic. So we have a reality that either at a local level, national level, or international level, Azerbaijani's claims over Artsakh didn't get acceptance neither by locals nor by international community.
Okay, that makes sense. But then after the USSR collapsed in the 1990s, why did Azerbaijan try reclaiming Artsakh, and then what did the conflict become?
So during these all Soviet years and 70 years, Artsakh was in boundaries of Azerbaijan, but was a part of the Soviet Union. When in 1991 the Soviet Union dissolved, there was a law that allowed autonomous regions to decide their own destiny in case the republics, the Soviet Republic, is leaving the Soviet Union. So Artsakh in that time was an autonomous oblast under Soviet Azerbaijan. So when in 1991 Azerbaijan left Soviet Union, it gave a legal ground Artsakh, then autonomous oblast, to decide its own future and declare independence. And Artsakh declared independence in 1991, in September, and as the other Soviet republics did in 1991. So when Artsakh declared independence, it had also did in compliance with the international law and fully in full compliance with then Soviet legislation. It kept all the procedures that are required to establish and to form a state, to form an independent state. During these 3 decades, our people, our country developed democracy and formed all the institutions, fully meets all the requirements of the Montevideo Convention of the on the statehood.
As I understand it, there was a referendum in the 1990s that Artsakh took to either maintain independence or to join Armenia, and Azerbaijan never recognized the autonomy of Artsakh. How did that affect Artsakh's foreign relations within the area, within the region itself?
So back in 1918, when the liberation movement started during the Soviet time, they were last years of the Soviet rule. In 1988, Artsakh was struggling for reunification with Armenia. And the Artsakh representatives, elected representatives, they appealed to the Baku, Yerevan, and Moscow to solve this issue peacefully and withdraw our autonomous oblast from the Soviet Azerbaijan and adjust it to the Soviet Armenian boundaries. And in response of this peaceful initiative, Azerbaijan has started mass pogroms and massacres in Armenian populated cities and settlements in Azerbaijan, in Sumgayit, Kirovabad, and other places that Armenians were living in compact. And they Azerbaijani authorities try to suspend this liberation movement and show like what will happen to population of the Nagorno-Karabakh, Artsakh, if these people were raising their voice for self-determination and for reunification with Armenia. So when Artsakh proclaimed its independence in 1991, Azerbaijan started a war, armed hostilities against the people of Artsakh, whom, by the way, it considered as its citizens. But they didn't stop them to start to launch a large-scale military offensive against the people of Artsakh. And this war, these armed hostilities continued until 1994. When the ceasefire were reached between the conflicting sides, and including Artsakh. Artsakh was a party to this ceasefire agreement. And what makes important in this ceasefire document and in this conflict is that when Azerbaijan asked for a ceasefire in 90s, it was ready and it accepted that Artsakh is a party to the conflict, and the signature of Artsakh representatives stands this document. But then later, Baku every time used every opportunity to refuse and to deny Artsakh as a party to the conflict.
So as I understand it, then Azerbaijan and Baku thought that Artsakh was part of Azerbaijan. But didn't Armenia also consider Artsakh a part of Armenia, and Yerevan thought that they had control over Artsakh? How did that change the relationship between Artsakh and Armenia?
Artsakh was a part of the Soviet Union in the boundaries of Soviet Azerbaijan. Artsakh has never been part of independent Azerbaijan. And when Azerbaijan left Soviet Union, it declared that it refuses Soviet heritage, legal heritage, and restores the Azerbaijani statehood existed in 1918-1920, where Artsakh wasn't part of this country. So it refused to be a legal successor of Soviet Azerbaijan, and in this way, Azerbaijan refused its legal connection with Artsakh because Artsakh was handed over to Soviet Azerbaijan, not to Azerbaijan. On the one hand, Azerbaijan refuses Soviet legal cessation. And on the other hand, it wants a Soviet political map and Artsakh that includes Artsakh. So the confusion is this. Azerbaijani authorities and their diplomatic corps use this confusion that the international community is not fully aware of these details, and they mislead the international community that Artsakh is a part of Azerbaijan, but it has never been part of Azerbaijan. It just was in the frames and in the boundaries of Soviet Azerbaijan.
This makes sense now, because even I was really confused about this and I've never heard about this either. So this makes a lot of sense when you spell it out like that. After 1994, though, so after the ceasefire, you mentioned that Baku still thought Artsakh was still part of Azerbaijan. But you also mentioned that Artsakh developed independently. Can you tell us how Artsakh managed to develop as a sovereign nation state and then build up institutions for democracy?
During these all years, we had no connection with Azerbaijan. Mm-hmm. We are not recognized on the international level, but either don't elect Azerbaijani president, we don't elect their parliament, we have no relationship with Azerbaijan, except border incidents and shootings, shellings, and etc. Azerbaijan considers Artsakh but the territory of Artsakh, because if they think that we are their citizens, they didn't launch a war against us, they didn't kill us, and so on. If Azerbaijan considers Artsakh its territory, they present to the international community like the territory of Artsakh belongs to Azerbaijan and Artsakh is Azerbaijan. But they don't tell people, the foreigners and the audience, that they have no influence on the processes going on in Artsakh. They have absolutely no influence here. They just present like it's a part of Azerbaijan. But almost in 3 decades, we developed democracy by our own, and with the help with the help of Armenia. Armenia was, and I hope is, still our security guarantor. And all infrastructure and language, the financial system, educational system, the religion, and so on, we are the same nation as Armenia. We are part of Armenia. We are Armenia. Artsakh is Armenia. But during these years, we have all institutions that are required to function as a state and function as a sustainable and viable state.
That makes a lot of sense. And I want to come back to the relationship between Armenia and Artsakh, because you said that Artsakh is Armenia. And I agree, because most of the population is ethnic Armenian. And you said that you have the same language and the same education system, etc. How did Armenian influence in Artsakh grow over the past 20 years? Have they been providing you just security forces, or has the relationship been more? Has there been more trade between the region, or just have you had a greater role in Armenia's parliamentary procedures, and have they had a greater role in your parliamentary procedures?
So no, we elect our own president, we elect our parliament, and we have a constitution, and we are a sovereign country. We have all attributes except international recognition. So we are a functioning de facto state. And we don't either elect parliament of Armenia or take part in elections forming government of Armenia. What is the influence of Armenia over Nagorno-Karabakh? Until the November ceasefire, Armenia was the main security guarantor of our people of Artsakh. So things have been changed after November 9, because Russian peacekeepers appeared in this region for the first time in the history of the conflict. So Armenia is our, when you are surrounded and you are an enclave, Armenia is the main door and the main window to the world. So we are only linked with Armenia, and now the situation is the same. Armenia is our doors to the world, and Armenia also helps us a lot to function as a state. And among other things, Armenia, for example, Armenian parliament shares its experience with our parliament, as we don't cooperate on the state level with other states, even if we have a relationship with other countries, and we have representations in more than 6-7 countries around the world. But still, through Armenia, we get all the necessary things for the capacity building, for the country in general.
I want to come back to the current conflict that ended with the 9th November ceasefire, which you've mentioned already. As I understand it, Azeri forces moved into Stepanakert sometime in September or October, and they launched a violent offensive against the people of Artsakh and Armenian troops. What was the effect of this violent movement by Azeri forces on the people of Artsakh and the people of Nagorno-Karabakh?
So when conflict erupted in the 90s and there were armed hostilities, an international mediation format was formed called OIC, means Group Co-Chairmanship. This chairmanship is composed of the representatives of Russian Federation, France, and the United States. And these three co-chairs, they started a peaceful negotiation process to settle this conflict. And during these all years, negotiations were going on under the auspices of this mediation group. But unfortunately, also during all these years, Azerbaijan didn't rule out the military way of solving the conflict. And in parallel with the peace process, it always tried to solve the conflict via military. It started also a war, a large-scale war in April of 2016, 4 years ago, before this war, and it went down to history as a four-day war. Mm-hmm. And in during this April war, the ceasefire was reached through the Russian mediation, but. Even after this war, they continue to negotiate under the auspices of the Minsk group. But then came the September, and they were prepared for this war, for launching this war. And this 44-day war showed that Azerbaijan not only didn't exclude solving conflict militarily, but it was ready to kill 150,000 population in order to free this land from Armenians and to take these territories.
That sounds awful, and I'm really sorry that the people on Artsakh and on ground in Nagorno-Karabakh had to experience this. What have the damages in Nagorno-Karabakh looked like right now, and how is the government working to recovering the losses?
So this war was unprecedented one since 90s. Azerbaijan not only shelled and bombed the military positions along the borderline or only borderline boundary villages and settlements, but also the capital, Stepanakert, was under constant fire during night and day. So it fully damaged our infrastructure, infrastructure was fully damaged. We lost electricity, mobile internet, mobile connection, gas, etc. All this civilian infrastructure was damaged, and people as a result of constant shelling of peaceful settlements, people living in this area, in these settlements, they were forced to leave their homes and to flee and seek safer places in Armenia. And about 90,000 people, they were forced to leave their houses. They became IDPs, and as a result of the armed hostilities, and of course, as a result of the November 9th ceasefire, because except the territories that we lost during the war, the leadership of Armenia was forced to hand over some of the regions of Artsakh to Azerbaijan. And this region weren't conquered by Azerbaijani military force, but they were handed to Azerbaijan peacefully.
And as a result of this, as I understand it, people in Yerevan are pretty angry and want Nikol Pashinyan to step down now, because they are quite upset with how Mr. Pashinyan actually dealt with the Artsakh question at the end of this war. What has the response been from the government of the Republic of Artsakh to these calls for Mr. Pashinyan to actually step down? Do they want a new government in Armenia to keep supporting them, or are they happy with the way Mr. Nikol Pashinyan dealt with the situation?
Well, there is a post-war period now, and the government is mainly trying to deal with the everyday needs of the people, and mostly people became IDP and of the lost territories. We lost 3/4 of Artsakh, and this makes a sense that we have right now many problems that our people face within, and our president declared that he will step up from his position, and extra snap elections will be will be held after when the country will be ready to hold elections, and he will not participate in these elections, and he will not run for his position. And just in this period of time, he wants to stabilize the situation in the country and then step down from his position. What comes to Armenia, even we are all Armenians living in Artsakh and in Armenia, but in domestic politics and in political issues, we keep not distance, but we don't intervene each other's political processes. It's up to Armenians living in the Republic of Armenia to decide the fate of their prime minister and their parliament. And we need we both government and people cannot intervene in these processes taking place in Armenia.
So you mentioned that this is the post-war period, and I'm really happy to know that the government is doing all it can to help Artsakh actually recover from the war itself. How has the presence of Russian peacekeepers in the region felt like? Is it different? Do you feel more secure? Do you think there is more stability now that Russia actually has troops in the region?
It will be naive to say that we are dreaming of Russian presence here, because every country and every nation wants to keep its security on its own. So if you are a sovereign state, you should keep your security and your security of your country, of your people, of your borders by your own. So, but we had no alternative to invite Russian peacekeepers to provide a security for our people. During the war, we expected that the Western countries, mostly France and USA, that are involved in this conflict as co-chairs and peace mediators, they are countries that were created in the examples of freedom, human rights, and this Western set of values. They will understand our strives and our struggle for deciding our own future by our own. So, but what we get, what we got from the West, were just empty statements and concerns that weren't able to protect us from Azeri bombs and drones. But Russia, unlike the West and the Western countries, acts rather than speaks. So when on the one hand you have Western empty statements, and on the other hand you have Russian peacekeepers, real soldiers with their tanks, so there is no room left for thinking long and inviting them to the region. So Russian peacekeepers now are here, and they provide security. And frankly, our people are grateful to them, since we feel more secure, and we can freely and safely travel to Armenia to leave Artsakh and come back, since Russian peacekeepers are providing the security in this corridor. And also in the several positions that that are at any time Azerbaijan can resump the hostilities, armed hostilities, and can attack. So Russian presence makes resumption of war unlikely.
That's good to hear. Do you think that this war and the situation that exists on ground now will increase the pressure on the international community to recognize the independence and sovereignty of Artsakh?
I don't think that the Western country, the West and other countries are ready to recognize the Republic of Artsakh. And I think they just will use this factor for their own interests. And they, if they want to get some something from Azerbaijan or Turkey. As you know, Turkey was directly involved in this conflict, and they also engaged thousands of mercenaries from the terrorist organization from the Middle East. And it was done with the direct support of Turkey. So they are always with Azerbaijan. And Western countries, if they want to be engaged in this regional politics, in this regional geopolitics, they should act. But now we see that it is the region is divided under influence of Russia and Turkey. Turkey has a full control of Azerbaijan, and even this war showed that the military command was exercised by the Turkish command staff, not by the Azerbaijani one. So they have full control of this of Azerbaijan and via Azerbaijan, and the territories that are now the territories of Artsakh now occupied by Azerbaijan and Russia. Russian military presence is now in Artsakh, in South Caucasus region in whole. So if West wants to be engaged in this region, they should act. And how they can act? They can take these cards to play. Like, we'll recognize Artsakh, but I am not sure that they will do this.
Talking about the West acting, the Human Rights Watch is now inquiring into whether Azerbaijan has committed human rights violations against Armenian prisoners of war. Do you think that just calling out human rights violations is enough from the West, or do they need to do a lot more within the region?
When we see that human rights organizations like Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International and others, they artificially equalize the actions of the conflicting parties, we are very disappointed on those human rights institutions and their reports. So when on the one hand you have so many proofs and recorded on the in the videos by Azerbaijanis themselves that how they commit war crimes, how they torture both combatants and civilians, and they record the videos and then circulate it in social media. These videos and these proofs and these acts and these committed acts of war crimes, they didn't find an adequate and proper response from these human rights institutions, human rights organizations. It you don't stop to believe in the ideas of human rights, freedom, and so on. But you think and you start believe that these human rights organizations also were tools for politics, for politicians to govern the international opinion. So if you are a human rights organization, you should do your job properly and defend human rights, not to serve to the politics. We also have the cases when the Western politicians took bribes from Azerbaijani authorities, they ended up to the prison. And the latest case was related with an Italian MP. And we see how this ends in the end.
This must be really disheartening for the people of Artsakh and the people of Nagorno-Karabakh who have been so adversely affected by this conflict. What do you think lies in store in the future of the South Caucasus region? Do you think that there is going to be some sort of stability coming into the region soon? Or do you think Azerbaijan might still think of military action as a tool in their toolkit and continue trying to annex Artsakh?
I think the Azerbaijani goal is to conquer the whole Artsakh, the territory, and expel us from here. It not once showed that its intent is to take the whole territory of Artsakh, and they are not interested in the fates of people living here. And they are just saying, like, go and live in your Armenia, in your Yerevan. What are you doing in our lands? But, you know, for example, me and my friends who were born in Artsakh, who build their houses and live for generations in this land, we can't just give up and say, okay, if Azerbaijan holds this territory, we should give up and start to live in other places, settlements of Armenia. But I am sure they for the future they have this plan, and their final purpose is to take the whole territory of Artsakh and expel all Armenians living here. I don't think, even if Azerbaijani president declares that the conflict is over for Azerbaijan, I don't think that conflict is over. The war is over. The military actions are over, but the conflict is not solved yet. When one side of the conflict is not satisfied with the results, it can this conflict cannot be solved and cannot be over. So I don't say that we are going to retake our territories back right now and so on and so on. But for us, for example, my native village, Talish, it's a village in the northeastern part of Artsakh, now under occupation of Azerbaijan. The Azerbaijani armed forces took this village in September. And our house and the graves of our grandmas, grandpas are there. So for me, personally, conflict is not solved. If my house is under occupation, if I can't visit, not only live, but even visit the graves of my ancestors, I can't consider the conflict is over.
That sounds actually quite distressing. What result do you think will Artsakh be satisfied with? At what point do you think that Nagorno-Karabakh will be happy and will say that the conflict is over for them?
If I say that Azerbaijanis should leave this region, it will not be rational, at least. And I hope the Azerbaijanis also come to the to this idea that neither us nor them are going to leave this region and our homelands. So if they want to leave their homeland, if they want to live in Azerbaijan, I want to live in my homeland. So for me, the conflict can be solved when there is no side that is not satisfied with the result of the conflict resolution. So if they want to live there in their homes, I want to live in my home. When they take my home and they can allow themselves to buy advanced drones, Turkish Bayraktars and Israeli made Arabs, and they have money for buying these kind of things, and they can take our homes and can take our villages and our churches and etc. And right now we can't do that. It doesn't mean that that they have rights and we have no rights. So just they have the military advantage right now. But it also should not be an incident for and the international community, I think, should draw some conclusion that military advantage should not be used against human rights.
Just one final question before I let you go, ma'am. Do you have any news sources or any books that you can recommend for us to read so that we can get ourselves acquainted and inform ourselves about the current situation in Nagorno-Karabakh?
We have local news agencies, and we have that covers also news in English. So it will be convenient for you to follow this. Artsakh Press, I can send you some links, and you can follow these media platforms for the future.
Yes, please. And I will definitely put the links to Artsakh Press and the other media links on the show notes for this episode itself. And I would also strongly encourage all of you to follow Ms. Gavalian on Twitter, because she provides an incredibly up-to-date source of what's going on the ground in Artsakh. For now, thank you so much for joining us and giving us your time, ma'am. This has been incredibly useful and eye-opening for me as well.
Thank you so much, Mr. Kapoor, for inviting me to your Matterfile broadcast. So it was a pleasure to speak to you and your audience about my country and about the fate of people living here. Thank you so much.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.